a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a recorded interview with mental health advocate Garrett Gunter. But first, disability news for the week of January 8, 2024. The Internal Revenue Service has determined that people with disabilities with ABLE accounts may increase their annual contribution to $18,000 effective this month. The federal gift tax exclusion increased to that amount, and since the annual deposit limit for ABLE accounts is tied to that measure, it will rise as well. The new limit is up from $17,000 last year and reflects a change in the maximum allowable ABLE account contribution, similar to changes over the past few years. ABLE accounts allow people with disabilities to save up to $100,000 without sacrificing their eligibility for Social Security and other government benefits. Medicaid can be kept no matter how much is in the accounts. Funds saved as in the special accounts that were established under a 2014 federal law can pay for qualified disability expenses, including education, health care, transportation, and housing. Interest earned is tax-free. While ABLE account contributions are capped at the gift tax limit, people with disabilities can save more if they are employed and do not have a retirement plan. Workers with disabilities in most of the states can save up to $14,580 in earnings besides the gift tax exclusion value for the year. Alaska residents can save an extra $18,210, and residents of Hawaii can save an additional $16,770. ABLE accounts are offered in 47 states if they have a disability that onsets before age 26. Under a 2022 federal law, that age limit will rise to 46 starting in 2026. As of September, there were over 158,000 ABLE accounts open across the country with over $1.5 billion in assets. More than 2 million people who receive Social Security income or SSI whose benefits were reduced or discontinued during the pandemic will see some corrections under a new settlement. The Social Security Administration has agreed to waive many overpayments that occurred between March and September of 2020, and the agency will refund people if they have already repaid the funds. Options are also available for those who had benefit overpayments as recently as April 2023. The changes are the result of a settlement to resolve a 2021 federal lawsuit that accused the Social Security Administration of wrongly reducing or cutting off SSI benefits during the pandemic. The class action suit, known as Campus versus Kijikazi, alleged that beneficiaries were penalized after they could not provide information to Social Security or challenge the agency's decisions because the agency stopped processing certain paperwork and closed its field offices for over 2 years during the pandemic. According to Michelle Spadafore, director of the Disability Advocacy Project at the New York Legal Assistance Group, quote, "This settlement does what SSA should have done in the first place, make sure that SSI recipients are not penalized or denied benefits essential for their survival as the result of circumstances that were outside of their control. The settlement provides crucial relief by putting money back into the pockets of SSI recipients who are still recovering from the tremendous challenges they faced during a global pandemic," end quote. About 250,000 SSI recipients are expected to have benefits credited back to their accounts automatically under the agreement. Also, the Social Security Administration will be issuing new guidance clarifying that COVID-19-related circumstances should be considered when placing blame on beneficiaries for overpayments that occurred between March of 2020 and April of 2023. The agency will also mail notices by the spring of 2025 to SSI recipients who were assessed an overpayment between March of 2020 and April 2023 with information about how to request a waiver and what factors may be relevant. This move may benefit another 2 million SSI recipients. And finally, in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, people with disabilities are participating in an unusual test of autonomous vehicles. The five self-driving vans always have a human operator in the driver's seat, ready to take over in complicated situations. But the computers are in control about 90% of the time. 5,000 rides have been given since 2022 with no accidents, according to organizers. Autonomous vehicles are also being tested in urban areas such as San Francisco, where extensive assessments of the technology are underway. Experiments have also begun in a few other states, including Iowa and Ohio. The pilot project is working toward a time when fully autonomous vehicles will assist people whose travel is limited by disabilities. The project is funded through the spring of 2027, which with more than $13 million from federal, state, and local sources. Users can arrange free rides via a smartphone app. For the foreseeable future, such services will probably run on predetermined routes with regular stops, as it would be more complicated to have autonomous vehicles travel on demand to unfamiliar addresses out in the countryside. Developers still need to overcome significant challenges before autonomous vehicles can become a regular part of rural life, but it's no longer something that can be dismissed as impossible. A 2022 report from the National Disability Institute predicted autonomous vehicles could help many people with disabilities get out of their homes and get jobs. And that's the news for this week.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by Garrett Gunter, who is a mental health advocate. I heard Garrett on another program on WEFT a couple of weeks ago and was very impressed with his story and his ability to articulate all his experiences. So I'm excited to bring him as a guest for you today. Welcome to the program, Garrett.
Hey, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. So why don't we start out and have you introduce yourself? And you don't have to focus so much on the disability part right now, but just kind of give people a sense of who you are, what you do, what things are you passionate about, and how do you like to spend your time?
Yeah, I'm a pretty normal guy, really. I'm starting to get back into school right now. I'm going to be studying psych, which I'm really excited about. I'm a musician, so I kind of like to use that platform as much as I can to try and help others who deal with the same things that I do. Mm-hmm. I have a big heart for people with addiction problems, mental health problems, and really the message that I like to spread is kind of just, you know, I want to help as much as I can, but also to encourage other people to reach out and ask for help when they need it, not to be ashamed to.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about some of the struggles that you've had over the years. You're not old. I don't know exactly how old you are right now, but you can tell me if you want, and if you don't want to, that's fine too.
Yeah, I'm 25. I'll be 26 in February.
Yeah, so yeah, still fairly young, but boy, you've really become quite an advocate in a short time. So talk a little bit about when you, in your life, at what age did you start thinking to yourself, or maybe it was your parents who came to the conclusion first, that maybe you were a little bit different than other kids your age?
I was really, really young when I started showing signs of, the first thing to really manifest for me was, my OCD. And
for those who don't know, OCD would be what?
Obsessive compulsive disorder.
Okay. And how did that show itself?
Well, when I was really young, early elementary school, it started out as I had this need to, you know, touch things with both hands, to count my steps, even numbers. I mean, it was an obsession over these little rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had this irrational fear that if I didn't follow through with this stuff, that, you know, somebody I loved was going to get hurt or die because of it. And it was definitely really consuming growing up.
Yeah, and how did that affect you when you were in school or with friends?
I definitely had trouble focusing in school. A lot of times it would kind of be at the forefront of my mind, and everything else was kind of almost like background noise, like chaos behind it. I remember being around my friends. I was kind of embarrassed about some of this stuff. I remember, you know, my brother would... I've got a brother who's 2 years younger than me. He's great. But he would always kind of be like, what are you doing? You know, so I knew it wasn't really normal. So I'd kind of try and hide it from my friends. And that was kind of, that took a lot of effort in itself, trying to kind of appear normal, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And so how did that impact? I mean, did you have problems with teachers who would try to discipline you for that behavior as a result, or did you kind of cope with it fairly well in school?
Kind of a combination of both. I mean, school was really hard for me. Like I said, you know, the focusing in class, mm-hmm. and then when I got home, really my guitar was kind of my therapy. So that's all I wanted to do all day, because that made sense to me. You know, everything about music has always kind of just made sense to me, and it kind of fits into my frame of mind, like how I'm wired. So a lot of times, you know, getting home, instead of wanting to focus on my school and stuff, I would just be completely over it for the day. I wanted to play guitar all night and go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up, you know, there's a lot of times I wouldn't turn in homework, and a lot of times where I was, you know, sleeping through class and things like that, having trouble sleeping at home. So it definitely played a big role in having a tough time with school growing up.
And I'm sure your parents got involved when you were relatively young as well. What kind of support did they provide to you over the years?
Yeah, it was tricky because when I was really young, when it first started, when I first kind of started showing signs of this stuff, it was kind of like, you know, out of left field for my parents. I mean, they'd never really been around that.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of, at first it was kind of like, well, that's not real. You know, why are you thinking like that? That's not real. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the longer it went on and it didn't go away, the more my parents were kind of like, oh, okay, maybe this is something we need to deal with, you know, because it was very real for me. And I think that's frustrating for a lot of people that go through the same thing, is like, you're trying to shout from the rooftop, like, this is real, this is my reality, when, you know, to a lot of the people you talk to, it just seems just weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, a lot of talking, especially with my mom. I'm close with both my parents, but my mom was kind of the first one to be like, okay, well, maybe we should take him to, you know, a psychiatrist or something like that. and I ended up, I did do a lot of counseling and psychiatrists and psychologists and all that good stuff growing up, which is why I'm so drawn to it, because in my eyes, I mean, it kind of really saved my life, and it gave me a life worth living, you know, getting help from these people.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges, at least the little I know about OCD and depression and some of the things that accompany that, is that there is no quick fix. There's not a pill that you can take to make it better. What works for you?
Yeah, so I do take medication, and like you said, it's not a quick fix, and it's not a magic pill, you know. I mean, it helps. And I've always, you know, I encourage people to try some medication and try that kind of thing. But there's a lot of coping strategies that I kind of use just throughout my daily life. I'm a really big fan of mindfulness exercises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just when my mind starts going crazy on me, I kind of, I settle down, I focus on my breathing, then I focus, you know, on how the shirt feels on my body, how the wind feels on my face, you know, what can I smell, what can I taste, what can I hear, and a lot of times that can help me kind of step out of that chaotic frame of mind and slow down a little bit. That's a big one I use, and mm-hmm. then music for me is a huge one, music and art.
Yeah. And so when you started, how old were you when you started on medication the first time? And was it did you stay on the same thing, or was it changed over time?
Yeah, so I've been on a few different ones. I first started taking medication, I was probably third or fourth grade, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I started trying medication, and for me, what I started on, I mean, helped with my symptoms, but there, you know, different people react differently, so
right.
Some of the side effects of some medications weren't quite right for me. Some of them I had trouble sleeping on, or grinding my teeth, appetite, things like that, and I think that's discouraging for a lot of people, and it was for me, too. I mean, it was very discouraging for me. I'm like, this doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there were times where I kind of gave up on it, but I really encourage, when I'm talking to people, to just give it a chance. If it's not working for you, go back and talk to somebody and try something different. So I've probably been on, you know, four or five over the years until I found one that really works for me. So it's a process, but it's definitely worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know that there are a lot of folks out there who struggle with OCD that don't reach out and get the help that they could benefit from because of that stigma. Have you experienced the stigma that kind of goes along with OCD sometimes?
Yeah, definitely. Especially, you know, where I live, I'm not saying anything bad about where I live. I live in a small town, and mm-hmm. it's kind of, you know, the manly man macho thing. And it's hard to reach out and say, you know, hey, I'm depressed, or like I feel really anxious, and these kind of things are kind of it did deter me a little bit as far as just not wanting to sound weak, and things like that. But, you know, like I've talked about before, I've learned to not view it any differently than a physical illness. I mean, I'm sure some people are, but generally people aren't embarrassed to say, you know, hey, I've got diabetes, or I got, you know, a heart problem or something like that. And I think we as society should really work towards kind of trying to classify these things in the same boat, so people aren't scared to make the effort to get better.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, the brain is a mysterious thing to most doctors, right? They don't really know how it works. But I think you're right, looking at it as a medical issue, and, you know, we have to deal with this as we would any other condition, is an important thing to convey, to the community, because people do look at it as, well, I don't understand what it is, therefore it's weird, or this person is strange because they have this condition. And that's something that I think lots of people with mental health issues deal with for their lives, because they feel like they have to hide it from others. Have you ever, you don't sound like the type of person who tries to hide that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, not anymore, because I have been before, you know, mm-hmm. and I've learned that me not hiding it maybe might help someone else to say, like, hey, this guy's not embarrassed, you know, why should I be? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I think that's what's so important to me about being open about these things is I just would really like to create some sort of change where more people are willing to be open about it. Because at the end of the day, like you said, you know, the brain is mysterious. I mean, I kind of think of the brain to the body as the ocean is to the earth. You know, mm-hmm. we don't know everything there is to know about the ocean. And it's kind of one of those things, you can't see it in an x-ray machine or a CAT scan or whatever, these chemical imbalances and things that people are dealing with. You have to speak up and be honest about your symptoms and be honest what you go through every day. It's hard to deal with unmanaged symptoms.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be really hard.
I can imagine. Fortunately, I don't have that issue, at least not on a regular basis. So I know that there are a lot of people out there who kind of struggle silently without a lot of support. Do you know other people with OCD that you connect with on a regular basis? Is there a group or an organization out there that people should know about?
You know, that I'm not 100% sure about, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. That would probably be a good thing maybe for me to look into at some point. I do have a family member that has gone through it really similar to me. I mean, it manifests itself differently in certain people, different people.
Mm-hmm.
And his has always been really similar to mine. So we relate on that level. But yeah, that definitely is a cool idea.
Well, I could see you being a very valuable member of a group like that, because you are so well able to articulate, you know, your thoughts and feelings and experiences that could be so important for somebody else to hear. Because I know that a lot of folks with disabilities often think that they're so alone in the world, that there's nobody else that has experienced these kinds of effects that you have described.
Yeah, it is. It is easy to feel that way, to feel just out of place. I mean, growing up, I've always been pretty personable and get along with people, but I never felt like I fit into a certain group, you know, and I've kind of found just through friends and family that kind of go through the same things that seems to be pretty common, with people that struggle with these same issues, is just kind of feeling a little bit out of place, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you were going to, you know, speak to people in the community, which is essentially what you're doing right now, what are the things that people who aren't familiar with OCD, depression, anxiety, and all the symptoms that people deal with that are mental health challenges, what do they need to know about that? About people who have those conditions?
I think it's really important for people to understand that it's very real. It's not necessarily like an emotional thing. You know, I mean, it connects to, it affects your emotions, but it's not, deep down, it's, you know, chemical imbalance or things like that we can't help it, you know, and it's, I think society is getting better at seeing these types of things, but I think there's still a lot of people that just kind of have that, like, suck it up and move on type attitude. And for me, I think it's just important for people to listen, you know, and just understand that it's a real thing. I mean, people give up and lose their lives every day in their own life, you know, and I think I think that that's another thing that's really looked over in our society is suicide, and it's more common than most people want to admit.
Yeah, I've heard that too, and thank goodness you found ways to cope that don't lead you in that direction, and your medication is helping in that too, I'm sure. But it sounds to me like music is the thing that really has kept you on an even keel. What kind of music do you like? What do you play?
I'm in a rock band called Ancient Ways. We play around here, and then but I also love all kinds of music. I mean, I love blues and a little bit of hip hop and stuff. And I'm really all over the place, folk and old country, and you know, it's always really music always has spoken to me in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
I really love it all.
Yeah, so psychology, yeah, it's an interest, definitely. Sounds like music might be a good sidebar for you.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely play music as long as I'm able, and if I don't lose my hearing from playing it, I'll listen as long as I'm able to.
Hopefully not. I know that can be a danger for sure. So is
right?
there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like people to understand about you or your disability or, you know, whatever you think is important for them to hear?
I think, you know, my biggest thing is just if there's anybody out there that's just scared to reach out or, you know, scared to just that stigma, just, you know, I think it's important for people to get past that stigma. And, and for me, I've gotten to the point that, you know, if people think I'm an emotional guy or whatever, I don't really care. You know, I'm making my life livable. And for those people that feel like there's no way out and that life is just always going to be this miserable trudging along day to day, it doesn't have to be. And I think it's important for people to, I know it's cheesy, but I always say there's a light at the end of the tunnel, you know? And I think it's really important for people in those really dark times just to realize that life can be better.
Yeah, well, I hope you're able to find a way to get connected to other people and share that message, because I think it's really important and you speak it so well. So we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining me today, Garrett Gunter, mental health advocate. Thank you so much for being on the show. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stand my ground. Dragging me down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Common Ground Food Co-op. Food that nourishes you and gives back to your community may be found at Common Ground Food Co-op, located in Lincoln Square Mall. Your dollar stays local when you shop co-op, cultivating community and local food since 1974. And now stay tuned for today's episode of Food Sleuth Radio.
Mm-hmm. Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hemmelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And today I am delighted to welcome my guest, Dr. Sarah John. She is a deputy director at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, where she leads CSPI's federal policy and private sector efforts to create